Hello and welcome to season 4 of the MRX Lab podcast, the show from FlexMR, where this year we'll be investigating how research and insight can make a big impact on the important topics that shape our daily lives. I'm thrilled for our first episode to be joined by two people who need no introduction. Paul Hudson is the CEO and founder of FlexMR, and Edward Appleton is the Director of Global Marketing and Sales at Happy Thinking People. Thank you both for being on the show. Edward, I'll come to you first. Can you give us a brief introduction to your history in the research industry and maybe share a professional hero or role model with us?
Sure. So I've been in research over 30 years. I started in the UK on the agency side with mass observation, then went to Nestle in the UK. I'm based in Berlin. My wife's German, so we made the move over to Germany way back. Spent a good number of years working as planning director in Grey and then Younger Rubicon, various client roles, including Coca-Cola, Avery Dennison. And now I'm in a marketing role at a qualitative and innovation consultancy, Happy Thinking People, here based in Berlin. And in terms of heroes, who would I say? Maybe Mr. Mark Ritson, the marketing guru and voice that's done an awful lot for putting research in a proper place in a marketing context.
Fantastic. And Paul, same question to you. Can you give us a brief intro to your history in the sector and maybe a professional hero or role model?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been in the industry now for over 20 years, probably nearly 25 years. My route, very, very different. I came from a management and business background and then came to a small agency, which actually did mystery shopping. And then I've been through various roles through building research teams, multi-method research teams. And then we progressed more into technology, which is when we founded FlexMR and specialized in creating online technology to sort of change the way that we do research and think about research that way. It's a very, very different path to Edward, all agency side, working with blue chip brands all the way through. From a hero, because it's more personal influence, really, which is my first boss, Michael Hume. He affected me really in the sense that he was able to show me how small businesses ran. But also he was a great thinker, taught me to independently think much more than I think even university had, but also brought together the importance of qual and quant. And all the way through my career, you know, we had that at the heart of everything we've done. And still at FlexMR, it's about combining different methods and trying to harness the emotional and the quantitative elements together.
Great. And that sounds like we've got, you know, two very different backgrounds on the show today, which can be really helpful for our discussion on strategic sense making, the idea that insight gives clarity to decisions at the executive level. And I want to start by just digging into your backgrounds a little bit and the idea that insight does mean different things to different people. Now, over the course of your careers, you've had different roles, research functions, marketing, advisors, business leaders. Edward, if I can ask you first, as you've kind of moved through different positions, how has your view of research changed?
Well, I think it's sort of like moved on as companies, if you think back, companies going way back the 80s, the 90s, they didn't actually have much data easily available on their customers. So the roles of panels was huge, for example, but that was the pre-internet era. So the notion of primary ad hoc research was extremely important. And when I worked at Nestle in the UK, we even had our own field force of 400 people that did nothing else apart from work for us. We had our own in-house statisticians. And I think the advent of digital and the internet and panels has changed all of that, and companies becoming smarter and smarter, if you like, in terms of understanding of their markets. But that's brought on a sort of like the secondary challenge is now companies, I think, are absolutely swimming in data, from the finance department, SAP data, all sorts of internet metrics, and then research sits in that. And it's long since lost. It's sort of like this position of we are the data champions. I think it's become much more democratic. That means that the insights function on the client side has changed radically. You have to be much more precise in terms of where you think you add value. You have to be very much more, if you like, tied into a business need, how the business makes money. Your category understanding is important. And persuasiveness and relationship building has also become extremely important. So I think it's changed radically.
And I think that brings me on to something I wanted to ask you about, Paul. Edward mentioned there the idea that there's a lot of different data sources, you know, business leaders have to take into account. What's your experience been with that? Where does research and data sit in your decision-making tree?
Well, I think that's very interesting. As a business person, it's different to a researcher. You know, we decisions are based on finances as much as customer data. So you're bringing in other sources of influence in there, other sources of data. We've always got to remember that in a business context, customer data is still only one part of that decision-making chain. If we're talking about high-level decision-making at board level, you've got finance department will have a big voice in that. And that sets out a very different context to that decision. And customer data is a part of that process and needs to be a part of that process. But increasingly, it's probably quite difficult to get that view into that sort of same context. Businesses shouldn't take a decision without it. But I think the temptation is with financial data being always there, always present, always key through the sort of business stakeholder side, it's quite difficult to get those two things to balance. And, you know, in a small business sense, you know, my decisions, you know, come back to budget and finance quite often. So I can really relate to that challenge, I think.
An open question then, to either of you. In that environment, what should researchers really be doing to make decision makers take notice of that particular input to become those data champions again? Or do we have to go in a different direction entirely?
I don't think we do. I think I pick up two things. One that Edward's already said, which is you've got to focus on those skills of influence, but also understanding, which is, I think, what marketeers and market research and insight and data people need to understand is they need to understand more of that business commercial context, that financial context. Because if you understand that, then you are able to place your data set in amongst it and make that argument stronger. Influence on its own needs that understanding, I think.
And from my perspective, on the client side, going to the agency side, I think agencies need to be cognizant of and hopefully well-versed in a client's business context, the challenges they're facing. So any individual piece of research should at least be informed by what single business challenge is this insights task going to address and what is going to be done once we've understood it. So this actionability thing, which is not new, is absolutely essential. That's the first thing. And the second thing is try to concentrate on the most single illuminating thing, because you probably, as you go through a project, you learn masses, and it's easy to get fascinated by the data, get very close to the data, and you want to tell it all. And you end up thinking, oh, I've only got 3 minutes. Or actually, it's only 5 seconds is what we're talking about, because we're living in TikTok age and everybody is in that situation. So you've got to try to think what would be the most exciting business relevant thing you've got from all the hundreds of things that have been floating in your brain through the last week on a business project. And can you get that across? Because the elevator pitch is, yeah, it's a sort of like a horrible phrase, but it's true. So that would be my sort of like suggestion, trying to narrow it down and grab people's imagination so that they want to say, oh, that's interesting. Can you tell me more about it? So you're inviting them to the deep dive and not sort of like saying, here's the wave. Did you enjoy the wave? And they said, oh God, I can't remember. I can't get all of that. You know, give me one thing. And they say, oh, that's interesting. Can you tell me more about it?
And I think that's so true. You asked before, Chris, about how it's changed over those roles. You know, when I was running research and building a research team, we were always guilty of that. It's difficult because you're invested in every part of that collection, every part of that analysis. You think it's all important, all interesting, and you want to give voice to all of it. And then someone comes in and says, what's the three most important things or the one most important thing? And you don't want to lose it. It's very hard to let go of those things. But as you move through to different positions, senior positions, influencing decisions in there, you learn exactly what Edward's talking about, which is actually you've only got 30 seconds, you've only got 5 seconds, you know, so you have to pull out the key thing. But actually we need all people in that project process to understand that. And it's not a criticism to say we're not going to take the other 95% of slides or whatever it is, data into it.
A challenge then for everybody. But do you have any examples maybe that you're able to share of where this has been done right, of where research or a particular project has been able to make a real difference to the way a company or a team thinks in the long term, something that achieves that cut through and salience?
Definitely. Do you want to go first, Paul? I'm sure you've got lots of examples.
I always go back to the one key project that I remember, but I remember it far more than I probably should because I was quite a young researcher at the time, but it was big influence on my career path, which was a customer service project, which was ongoing, but for a very big satellite sort of TV at the time, digital TV. But it went to the very, very highest seat. I always remember a debrief with the highest person in the operational side of the business. And it had real cut through. You could see and be a part of that decision at that point. But it required all of the people, you know, beneath that operating officer to know that it was really important to get that voice heard. But it was a particular time in a particular company where that really made sense. But you really felt the cut through in that environment. And as I say, it had a huge influence on me and my career, but it also had a huge influence on that business because it had that cut through.
I could give you loads of examples, Chris, and Paul is now taking me back into the past. So it sparked my memory bank, including presenting to Bass Breweries in Stoke-on-Trent way back, but I won't talk about that. It was very interesting about the positioning of the brand. We did a huge Q&A, and it turned out the positioning of the brand was totally wrong, and all the advertising agencies were sitting in the room, and they started challenging the data. It was really interesting, and I was a junior researcher at the time, and I was obsessed with statistical significance, and I was sat there with my little pocket calculator and told to shut up by my boss and said, yeah, we think we can figure that out. Thanks, Edward. But two more recent examples, loads of them, maybe one or two we can talk because they've been published, or just one, which is work done for Pernod Ricard on a sort of like a almost like a forgotten jewel, one of their brands called Suze, which is one of their aperitif brands, where happy thinking people took a different approach to exploring the positioning challenge. It wasn't clear, it was differently positioned in four markets, and we took a very different approach to understanding the positioning of the audience. And then we started with social media analysis and semiotics, and came to sort of like some hypotheses about what might be true for the brand. And then we finished up with actually sort of like in-depth qualitative research. And it was a real eye-opener for the company to help them understand what was special about the brand and how they could position it towards barkeepers, etc., across the world. So it's a bit. If you want to read about it, it's on SMR, and it was presented in lovely Dublin in 2018. And anybody who really wants a copy and hasn't got the SMR membership, drop me a line and I can send you a copy of it. But there are loads, actually, Chris. I think masses, and we could have another talk on that one.
For anyone who does have an SMI membership, we'll drop the link in the description, and for everyone else, get in touch with Edward. Sounds like you'll be happy to share. But I want to just dig into some commonality in that case between these examples. What do you think it is that made these projects stand out? Do you think it's a cultural element within the business? Do you think there's an element of just luck being in the right place and time? Or are there specific skills as well that kind of needed to be in place for that to happen?
In a way, it's all of it. You do need a culture that's right in a business. I think, you know, the example I gave, that there was a culture in that business at that time. It was a very, very hard-nosed business culture, but it was also one that recognized that marketing and customer was at the center of everything, and it influenced and affected every KPI in the business. So they had the culture set out right, but it was also about individuals. You know, it's particular individuals, particular skill sets that connected and made that work and sort of oiled that process to make it work. I think it's all of it in a way. You do need to think about the structure, the culture, the people and the skills. You can't just think of it as a set piece, if that makes sense.
I think the relationship between the client and the agency is critical to understand how much time and money you need for a certain project, and be honest. They say, well, here, I think we can, you know, we can be honest. We say, well, actually, we've got so much knowledge on this product already. If you have a four stage process, you can actually be free to say, well, actually, we shouldn't do anymore. We'll stop at stage two. But also when you see, actually, this is a really important project, and that was this Suze project I mentioned, the aperitif brand from Pernod, where they said this needs time. You can't just sort of like do this in 2 weeks. You're going to have to take time through the various phases to involve enough stakeholders, to get people enough involved internally so you get internal buy-in. And that takes trust. And I think in today's environment, it's really, really important that we don't just knee-jerk and saying everything has to be done at the speed of internet. You have to say, how important is it? How much time should I dedicate to sense making? How much time can I actually listen to, watch what people are saying, say on an online community, and then advise accordingly? And that gets done best in a relationship where you can trust somebody, you've worked with them for a number of years, and it's a very, very valuable thing to have. And I'm not against luck, Chris. I think we all need a bit of luck all the time, but I think things like relationships are earned. It's nothing to do with luck.
But I think you've also drawn another really important point there, Edward. You know, it's about understanding the type of decision. We often train researchers to think about methodology, and one thing is about advising the right methodology in the right situation. But it's also understanding about the type of decision that needs to be made. You know, some decisions can be done quick. Some decisions can be used secondary data. Some decisions need to stop and think. And Chris, I know you've talked a lot in the past about fast and slow, and I think decision making is the same. There are some. It's not all fast. There are different types of decisions in a business. Some very, very big strategic decisions shouldn't be made, as Edward said in his phrase, at the speed of business. So I think the skill is to understand the type of decision that's going to be made, and use the data accordingly.
I think all of that is probably even more challenging today, where, you know, we're looking ahead to an economic landscape where a lot of teams are going to be squeezed to deliver more value for less. That might translate into cost pressures. It also might translate into time pressures, but it is important to give decisions the right breathing room, like you've mentioned. So if researchers do want to influence strategic decision making in that kind of environment, what are your recommendations for them?
Well, I think the difficulty with economic context like that is we end up making quite strategic decisions in a faster, shorter sort of time frame. I think that's one challenge, to try and balance that in that kind of economic situation and context. You've got to understand the context of the market. You've got to understand the context of your sector and the position of the competitors. I think all of those things become more important in an economic downturn element. But also you've kind of got to zero in on the particular behaviors of your customers and really zero in on what they're doing, because there'll be micro trends there that are changing very, very fast that you really need to understand and sort of watch out for, I would think.
I agree with that. And I think one of the things that we're going through at the moment is hyper uncertainty in many, many markets. And it's so, so important to question assumptions in a post-COVID world. So you might have a great model that worked in 2020. Are those assumptions still correct? The relationship between online purchasing and in-person shopping, for example, what are the dynamics in your category? And if you don't understand what's going on, you don't use qualitative research and quantitative research in tandem properly professionally, you could make some decisions which could be costly. And I think there are enough examples where people have made major investments and they were based on assumption that, for example, internet would take over a category completely, and it hasn't. So I think there's it's vitally important to try to understand people's uncertainty in these very, very difficult times. And there are cost-effective ways of doing that. I don't think necessarily it's true to say that quick needs to be bad, but it has to be very focused, it has to be very informed, and it has to be done by people with an understanding of the business context on both sides of the equation. I think it's more important than ever to understand the strategic implications of what we're doing and not fall into this trap of saying, well, we're only going to do a bit of tactical research and we're going to spend less money on it, because the strategic opportunities for brands now are bigger than ever. What you're looking at as a marketplace where it's going to be different in 6 to 12 months time, now is a good time to do investigations of the brand memories that you could be creating, and not necessarily how is my attribution model working, and how can I increase my short-term ROI. Covered too much in that response there, Chris. There's a lot to be said.
There's absolutely a lot to be said. I think there's a lot of areas that I'd love to jump into further as well. Yeah, I think there's some good research around at the moment on the idea of short-termism affecting the ability to recover kind of along with an economy, that overinvestment in tactical performance-driven marketing is a risk. And there's a role for research in there, I think, to understand what the right, going all the way back to things like media mix modeling, what that balance is, especially in a time like we are in now.
I think the process of decision making probably needs to be thought about in a business as well, more at this time, for all of the reasons we've talked about today. You know, the example I gave of that project, with it almost had a sort of shock and awe tactic in a very traditional sort of debrief style, picking out two or three key things that sort of shocked and drove the business into action. But that style of decision making doesn't necessarily hold true either in today's world of what Edward said at the beginning, democratized data, and nor does it necessarily hold true in a post-COVID world with hybrid working, and nor does it necessarily hold true in a world that's got hyper uncertainty and economic uncertainty built into it. All of those elements actually require, I think, a more fluid format of decision making. It probably requires a more collaborative style of business than one that I think, you know, traditionally, in the example I gave, was very much almost shock and awe tactics. You haven't necessarily got the time or ability to bring everyone together into a space, the right decision makers, and prepare it and tee it up for that sort of environment in a world which is changing so fast, in a world that is encouraging hyper tactical decisions, and in a world that has democratized data everywhere. The challenge is to do all of that and still make sure that you're considering it in the right considered way. I think very difficult.
I think that there's also, you know, the role of the agency. A lot of what you read at the moment is about that clients have the tools to do a lot of the research themselves. And I think that's definitely true. But the role of an agency is there to actually step outside of a corporate culture and to break from corporate language, to, if I dare say, don't engage in groupthink, and to allow individual voices, carefully selected, of course, emotional situations, and saying these are your customers. This is the task of empathy. And yes, as you say, Paul, you've got the finance director sitting next to you and saying, but we can't afford that. Very, very true. Saying these are your customers. They also can't afford it. So you need to listen to both of them. And even if it's like 50p, even if it's a small amount of money, they're still struggling. And these are the realities that certainly it's easy to forget if you are in a privileged position. If you're in a corporate position, you're earning a lot of money. It's also true for communication functions. You're actually sheltered from people's real problems. And the role of research is, well, don't lose touch with your audience because they're going through tough times. And it's not all bleak. You know, you can still celebrate the wonderful moments in life, but you've got to understand how they're living their lives. And you really need to avoid coming across as tone deaf, for example, or misunderstanding people's desire for interpretation of really important things like environmental friendliness, and avoid cliches, diversity, really big topic. But think about it from your audience perspective and not from your own corporate perspective. I think that's so important in today's times, because gaps are appearing between people who are powerful and people who are powerless. And I think that really we cannot just be sense makers. I think that was your phrase, Chris, but also bridge builders. It's a sort of like it's not really like an umpire at all, but it's just making sure that two worlds connect, if you like.
You remind me a lot of I think it's Ritson's first rule of marketing, that the moment you sit on the other side of the desk, the moment you act on behalf of a business, you're not your customer anymore. Even if you might buy your own product, you're not the customer, and you don't know how that person may be thinking. And I think that's quite an important point to remember.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think the once you're inside a corporation, you know an awful lot more about that corporation, and it's essential to have a continuous sense of reality check on the role your brand is taking and what memories this brand is creating, and how you need to adjust in the way that's managed, whatever model you like to take, whether it's a generational model or a life staging model, whatever. I think research is so important in bridging those worlds.
And I think that is a great note to end today's episode on. A lot of food for thought. Before we do go, what is, Paul, I'll come to you first on this. What's the one thing you'd like people to remember about the role of research in sense making?
I think one of my last points probably, which is I think in this environment which we're in at the moment, it's about recognizing a different style of decision making is probably needed, which is probably more collaborative, more influential across the business, which probably just requires a bit of thought process to how you engineer that.
And Edward, same question to you. What would you like people to remember from today's episode on strategic sense making?
Don't cut your research budget. It's the most important thing. You've got to keep in touch with consumers. Their ability to change, to choose something different, is higher than ever. And their attuned sense of greenwashing, marketing BS, is hugely evolved. So keep in constant in touch, and don't just make it lip service. Really try to cut out some time if you're on the client side to dedicate in your week to listen to people, to really observe. And if you've got an online community, don't just have it in your diary and say, oh, I didn't make something more important happened. Take time to listen, because people are going through tough times, and I think it's so important for brands to try to play a meaningful role in that.
Paul, Edward, Thank you so much again for joining me today. I've really enjoyed our discussion. And thank you to everybody listening to. We'll be back next month with another deep dive into the ways that research is having an impact on the big topics that shape our day-to-day lives. Until then, I've been your host, Chris Martin, and this has been the MRX Lab.